I sent out the thought, rather strongly perhaps, that I might be allowed to have a visit from her. As a rule, I do not ask for any particular manifestation. Especially after my experience of Ab's visit, and several other events. One morning, early, I was awakened by something that felt like a heavy ball bouncing about on my bed. I was half asleep still, and stupidly called out in a cross voice, "Go away, go away." I don't know what made me cry out in this way, except that I was startled and had a vague idea that I had been thoroughly enjoying an extra deep sleep, from which I had been rudely awakened by this persistent bumping which had been going on, I think, for some minutes before I realized what it was that was disturbing me. As soon as I called out, I saw a figure, whether it was a man or woman I could not tell, in the very dim light coming through the blind pass between my husband's bed and mine, and bend down and pick up the offending object from my bed. The space between our two beds was less than a foot, and I felt the impact of a solid body as their figure squeezed between 117. The figure gathered up the object in his or her arms, and literally scurried across their room to the door. Protesting gurgles, sniffs and snorts arising from whatever had been picked up, made me realize too late that my little dog had been brought to me and put on my bed, and that she had been dancing about on top of me, purposely trying to awaken me, as she always did each morning when she lived here on the earth with us. I mentally called, "Come back," but it was evidently too late. I had repulsed, or interfered with, something by my annoyance and aversion. Now, the extraordinary part was this. I watched the human figure hurry across to the door, and stand there for a second or two as if waiting for the door to open. On there, inside of the door is a chain, also a lock, and both are kept fastened and turned at night. I distinctly heard the chain being drawn up its socket, and then the key turned in there. Lock, not by the materialized figure but by an invisible hand. The door opened sufficiently to allow the figure to pass out, the chain was replaced and the key turned again. I heard the footsteps go down the stairs, and then the same thing happened to the bolts and key of the outer door. They were drawn and turned, the door opened, closed again quite loudly, and the bolts shot and the key turned. I afterwards learned, through Feder, that she and some of her friends had thought to please me by granting my wish for a visit from Ching, my dog, and that two people had volunteered for the experiment, one who was accustomed to entering the physical state, and therefore materializing in a substantial way, and the other, a person who could only manipulate certain material conditions and objects, but could not use the power so as to build up his body sufficiently solidly for it to be visible. It was this second person who stood by and withdrew the bolts, etc., and opened the doors, because the first person had taken on the physical conditions too strongly to be able to pass through matter. Indeed, for the time being, and to all intents and purposes, a materialization becomes part of what we call matter. Afterwards, the materialized material has to be shed, and this cannot always be done in a second or two. The fully materialized spirit sensed my nervousness and annoyance. It evidently reacted unfavorably on him. He wanted to get out of my presence in order to cast off his temporary physical husk and regain his own condition. I understand now how well balanced and poised we should always be in the presence of phenomena, especially of the physical kind, as undoubtedly we charge their atmosphere around us with our thoughts and feelings, and this produces what may be either constructive or destructive conditions for the spirit operators. When the last sound had died away, I lay awake, wishing that I had been more prepared for my spirit visitors and given them a welcome. I wondered where the power had been taken from to build up a body so solid as the one that came close to my bed. 118. Not since the time when Abdullah paid me his one and only nocturnal visit had I seen such a complete materialization under ordinary conditions in my own home. Morning came and my husband awoke, very slowly, with a great deal of stretching and yawning. I waited until he was fairly well awake before telling him of my experience, but before I could do so, he said, "I say, I have had an extraordinary time. It was not like a dream, it was too real. I seemed to be in this room, but there were guys around me. And they were drawing power from me and using me as a materializing medium. He must have been in a semi-trance in order to have known something of what was happening. I remembered that, while the figure was in the room, I heard my husband breathing very heavily. This always happens if the guides draw on him for power, and I was rather anxious as to whether he would feel the strain of this last experience, and watched him very carefully for a day or two, but noticed no ill consequences. The guides seemed to sense my anxiety and do not use his power in this way now, as it is better for him to use all he has for building up his physical health, which is not very robust at the best of times. Taking a survey of the last few years, I felt I had hit my fair allowance of physical phenomena, both with a fully trained medium under the usual conditions of the séance room, and also in my own house, with only my husband and myself present. They were all useful experiences, and most valuable in showing us how the guides can adapt themselves to earth conditions. They opened up so many possibilities, but I felt that now I knew what could be done in that way. I did not want a constant repetition of it, nor did I feel that I had any right to expect my spirit friends to be continually contacting their material side of life, or manipulating those very physical conditions merely in order to demonstrate their ability to do so. I knew they could do it, and that was sufficient. Therefore, I asked them to concentrate on helping me on the mental side, so that I could become more receptive to their thoughts and wishes. I knew they had definite plans for helping people on Earth, not only to the knowledge of the other world, but also to the very important task of preparing for it, and fitting themselves for the conditions there. 119. Chapter 36. How to Develop Your Psychic Faculties. So many excellent books have been written on the subject of developing your psychic gifts, that there would seem to be little or nothing left to say on the matter, but a great number of people, mostly strangers, write to me and ask for my personal advice on their subject. Can I advise them how best to conduct a circle for direct voice, or how to do automatic writing, or see clairvoyantly? Indeed, they ask 101 questions. And it is very difficult to advise anybody as to the best way of developing any of these forms of mediumship, unless one knows the person's, their health, mentality and general conditions and surroundings. There are many cases where one would discourage their would-be mediums, if one knew them personally, so I always send them along to some well-known institution where classes are held for the purpose, and where the applicants will be interviewed by some responsible and experienced person, who will ascertain their qualifications and the desirability of encouraging them to sit for it, just as you would if you intended developing any other gift, such as music, painting, public speaking, etc. Then count the cost, in time, concentration and, above all, remember that a certain amount of sacrifice is involved if one wants to do first-class work as a psychic, not just for a little while, but to be able to go on working, year after year, and keeping up the quality of one's mediumship. But you may say, I really don't want to go in deeply for it, and give up my life to it. I only want to develop a little power, just enough to enable me to see our spirit friends. Occasionally. I don't want to devote my life to it. Well, if that's all you want, and if you have made up your mind to stop just at that point, you can still follow the advice laid down in the following pages, but you will find it is very difficult to draw lines as to how much you want to do, or not to do. The spirit operators who will gather round you in order to help your development, and you can't do it all on your own, you know, are eager to open the eyes of everybody on earth to the beauty and reality of the spirit world. They continually tell us that they long to spread this knowledge of the life beyond, and great joy is theirs when they find some willing, earnest person in the physical body, who will cooperate with them for this object. What better work could there be than demonstrating the existence of this other world to their hopeless, the sad and the weary? May I reach that purest heaven, be to other souls the cup of strength in some great agony? Enkindle generous ardor, feed pure love, beget the smiles that have no cruelty. So shall I join the choir invisible, whose music is the gladness of the world. G. Eliot. 120. Do not these words appeal to you, kindle in you the desire to become a cup of strength to some poor brother or sister who is bowed down by sorrow? And what more efficacious way can there be than by making him or her sure of another world where they will meet again those that they have loved long since and lost a while? I do not mean that you should all aim at becoming professional mediums, though I hope the day is dawning when a greater number of people will qualify for, and enter, their professional ranks of mediumship, and therefore become accessible to genuine inquirers, especially bereaved persons. Many people wish to preserve their amateur status, and as the law stands at present, by which anybody who openly follows such a calling may be prosecuted and fined heavily, or even imprisoned, one cannot blame them. But one aspect of the matter, let that they are thereby making it extremely difficult for strangers and people in need of psychic help to approach them, has probably not entered their minds. In the early days of my development, I rebelled strongly against Fader's idea that I should ever take up the work in a professional sense. It was only when I realized that by working merely among my friends and acquaintances that I was narrowing the sphere of my work, that I at last consented to become a professional medium. How awkward it would be if a clergyman, a doctor, or a lawyer, were to have qualms about accepting fees for their services. We should find ourselves often saying, "Oh, dear, we really can't ask Dr. Smith to come again. He's already been twice lately. It's presuming on his time and generosity. Even in an emergency, we should feel diffident about taking up the expert's time without a quid pro quo. All professional people, especially doctors, do a great amount of work for nothing. So do mediums, several whom I know personally do as much unpaid work as they do paid, but, like the doctors, exercise discretion and, as much as possible, only give their services to necessitous cases. However, there may be circumstances in your life that prevent you from giving up your entire time and energy to mediumship. You may have other very important work to do on entirely different lines which you cannot give up, and which it is your bounden duty to consider perhaps for the sake of other people even more than your own. In that case, I would advise you not to attempt trance work. Keep to some normal form of development, such as automatic writing, clairvoyance or healing, which probably ought to come before anything, as it was the one power above all others that our Lord used when on earth, in order to demonstrate the power of his spiritual gifts. We know he used clairvoyance and possessed a wonderful power of materialization, but judging. From the records in the New Testament, it appears that he practiced the laying on of hands and healing, generally, more than any other kind of psychic gift. If possible, pay at least one visit to a reliable and experienced psychic, in order that he, 121, or she, or the control, may perceive the direction in which your psychic power is best developed. It also is possible that you can remember some incident of a psychic nature in your life, which will substantiate the conclusion arrived at by the medium. For instance, a man who always maintained that he had never had any evidence whatever, how positive these people are, that would lead him to suppose that he possessed any psychic power of any kind, went to a medium, whose control at once perceived that he had strong healing power, in addition to the gift of diagnosis, which is even more rare than the ability to heal. The man could scarcely believe it was true, but the control reminded him of two or three cases in which he had been brought into contact with someone who was ill, and that his presence had had a remarkably beneficent effect upon the patient. A few years previously he had been told that his child was dying of an incurable disease, and that a very drastic operation might prolong life, but there would only be the slightest chance of saving it. He had felt a keen revulsion to the idea of the operation. And without any ordinary reason for coming to such a conclusion, he said that something told him, in spite of the unanimous verdict of the eminent doctors, that his child would not die, but would recover completely. This actually had happened, and there medium's control explained to the father how in his rebellion against the doctor's edict, he had stayed in his daughter's company more than ever, and thrown out all his thoughts in the direction of her recovery. He was really using his undiscovered healing power upon her, and the close physical and mental contact with her gave him the right conditions in which to exercise it. This man took the control's advice, and read several books on the subject of healing, chose the methods that appealed to him most, there is a great deal in doing that, and went ahead without joining any classes, or receiving any personal tuition except for the few hints given him by the control in that one sitting. Another man, when told he had the gift of clairaudience, stoutly denied it, though he said that he would prize such a thing more than anything else in the world. When asked carefully to think back and remember whether he had not had some evidence of it, he said, "Not the slightest. Never been psychic in my life." His wife interposed hereby, quietly remarking, "Well, dear, what about that voice you said you heard in the trenches? That you said was like your mother's?" "Oh, that, well, yes. I did hear a voice. It said to me, 'Clear out of that spot, my boy, quickly,' and I did, or I'd have been killed the next minute." "Well," we all asked, "wasn't that a psychic experience?" "I don't know. I hadn't thought about it." "No, yes, well, I suppose, now I come to think of it, it must have been psychic, but I never thought of it in that way before. I just heard a voice that sounded like mother's." 122. This man took steps to develop his psychic gifts. He is an exceedingly hard-working businessman, but spending what time he can manage in learning all he can about there. Subject of psychical power has opened his sensibilities and powers of perception, and he says he is more successful, happier and more useful to other people than he has ever been before. The very occasional glimpses he gets of those who have passed over give him added strength to get through the difficulties of his strenuous material life cheerfully and courageously. Yes, you will find that a great number of people have had some definite psychic experience, and have never recognized it as such. Why, they don't know, neither do I. But we can only think it must be because anything of a psychic nature has been relegated to the rubbish heap of one's memory, as something not quite normal, not quite the thing, so it has been put away quickly, where no one will see it, not even oneself. A young widow I knew, whom I will call Mrs. A, had a great tie in the shape of an aged relative who depended on her. There was no one else in the family who could take her place, and she led a very circumscribed lonely existence, in a small provincial town, attending to the wants of the invalid for many years, until she herself arrived at middle age, when the invalid passed away, leaving her niece very little money. Fortunately, a year or two before the aunt's passing, the niece had come into contact with a medium, who saw that she had an excellent power of clairvoyance, which could be developed quietly at home, and she gave her some simple directions, which I will repeat in a later chapter. Mrs. A carried them out, but only progressed slowly. The medium visited their town again several months later, and told her she would be helped in her development by meeting some people who were interested in the same subject and were neighbors. Inasmuch as they happened to live only a short distance away, the promised meeting came about in an apparently accidental way. Long after, my friend was told by her guides of the infinite trouble they had taken to bring her into touch with these people, who proved themselves to be the greatest help to her, firstly, by talking to her about her development in a sympathetic way, and secondly, by allowing her to practice her rather elementary clairvoyance upon them as often as she felt impressed to do so. This was a great help, but the meeting might have taken place some time before, and valuable time been saved, because at the first sitting, the medium had advised my friend to attend the local spiritualistic church, which she, the medium, was visiting that very week for propaganda work, and addressing their Sunday evening meeting that was held irregularly. Such meetings have been held for many years, in almost every town, large or small, in England, Wales and Scotland, if only one takes the trouble to find them out. Now, Mrs. A had taken steps to find the meeting place, but she only went and looked at it from the corner of the rather dirty little street where it stood. She happened to see their local postman and his wife, and some of the rest of the congregation whose social status she guessed to be even beneath that of the postman entering the building, and she promptly walked home again. 123. I have often found this regrettable feeling of snobbishness exists, and it masquerades under the guise of intellectual superiority. People have said to me, "Yes, I know there is a spiritualist church at such and such a town where I live, and I've heard there's an excellent developing circle held in connection with it, but my dear, you should see their place, and you should see the people, too awful for words. It simply can't be done. Grates on one, you know." Yes, many things can grate on one, if one lets them, but in this subject, as in others, one has to take the best means to hand, and make the best of it. To return to Mrs. A, the guides were very understanding, and they saw that this particular woman was merely a slave to convention and custom, so they waited, and then brought her into touch with these other people who were, what she would call, of her own class, but who had been attending the very church she despised, ever since it opened. Naturally, there is something to be said in favor of this environment idea. Who doesn't feel happier in congenial surroundings, with refined cultured people around them? Probably one can accomplish anything more easily under easy conditions, but may not. The development that is attained by strenuous and persistent effort, and in spite of, not because of, material conditions, be of the finest and strongest growth in the end? Please don't think me egotistical if I just refer to the fact that my own development took place under what Mrs. A would have called impossible conditions, surrounded by impossible people, in shabby, even dirty places, people talking on all kinds of subjects. Even quarreling, just a few yards away from the room in which we had to develop, but we made the best of it, Florence, Nelly and I. For a little while before each sitting we charged the air with welcoming and happy thoughts towards the spirit friends who, we hoped, might be gathering around, preparing to speak to us. In other words, we made our own conditions, instead of wasting years by waiting for conditions to be made for us. Our anxieties were put on one side for an hour, our thoughts lifted up in a simple prayer for a blessing on the expected communications, communicators and ourselves, and our sordid, ramshackle room was transformed into a little bit of heaven. Accomplishing this night after night, undoubtedly helped the three of us to get cheerfully through the drab and dreary lives we had to lead. Speaking for myself, I do not think I could have had the courage to struggle through it, had it not been for this comforting contact with our friends who had passed over. Fortunately, the friend of whom I have been telling you, possessed a fund of sound common sense, in spite of her little social prejudices, and she worked hard, reading any books that she could borrow, as she could not afford to buy them. She had only a 124 few friends to try her power on, but she succeeded and eventually came to London, and did a great deal of useful platform work, going regularly to all the churches in and around London, where her clairvoyance was much appreciated. 125. Chapter 37, Some Necessary Spade Work. I have quoted the case of Mrs. E, because it shows what we can accomplish without money or influence. Of course, if you can go to a good medium and get advice, it saves time, and possible mistakes, but if you can't do so, and have not sufficient confidence in your ability to go ahead alone, by study and opening up your receptive powers, then there is another way, but it usually requires the assistance of at least one person, and that is, through the table, just as I began with Florence and Nelly. From my own personal experience, I would say this is a very good way indeed. The best method for conducting a table sitting you will find in another chapter. The table appears to absorb a certain amount of your power or magnetism, draws it out of you, which is a good thing in itself, as one of the difficulties you are faced with is that of projecting the power. While it is buried in you, it cannot express itself or produce any result. At first you will only get the usual tilting of the table and the laborious spelling out of messages, but by this rather slow method you can get sufficiently into touch with your spirit friends to enable you to ask them whether you have any special gift, if you have a guide ready to help you to develop it, and so on. Your spirit friends may tell you that it is too early for them to see precisely what form your power may take. If they tell you there is a guide attending you who has some particular work to accomplish through you, he will probably have a good idea as to what form your mediumship will take, and he will tell you at once. You will remember that. Fader told me, almost as soon as I got into touch with her, that my work was to be that of a trance medium, and that she would control me. This was the last form in the world that I wished for, or would have thought suitable in my case. The guides seldom make a mistake. Of course, before you ask them for such important information, you must make sure of the bona fides of your spirit communicators. If you sit regularly for a few weeks, or if possible, months, you will soon find out whether they are what, and who, they purport to be. After all, how do you prove the genuineness of your friends on Earth? Only by getting to know them as well as possible, trying them out in quite ordinary ways, And if you find them honest, truthful and straightforward, you trust them to any reasonable extent.